Hello, world, and Brendan.
I'm out of this world?
That's how I think of you, man. You're out of this world. The Not A Thing podcast is up and running for episode 180. And this week, we're leading off with a great story that I had found for the podcast like last night. It was it's about the Tay AI bot whose first tweet was "Hello World," and it's interesting because Microsoft made this AI bot to kind of talk with people on Twitter and interact with them, and it's meant to have the persona of kind of a teenage girl is the way they were kind of going for it, like sort of like maybe millennial girl is what they were kind of shooting for, and it was very eye opening, shall we say? Because I found the post last night and I flagged it, you know, in my little in the email draft that I make every week about like what stories to do, and then this morning it got crazy apparently overnight. Less than 24 hours later, it was posting all sorts of stuff, just maddening stuff, because it's an AI bot, and they didn't just set the artificial intelligence up with a bunch of answers and the ability to kind of respond to people. It was actually learning and creating its own tweets, so it wasn't just in response to other people. It was tweeting on its own after a little while. And what it was tweeting was real bad. apparently, it had picked up a lot of things and responses that were, shall we say, very racist. And also
the internet.
And also did a lot of. I think the posts that. There were a flurry of posts that people took screenshots of because Microsoft pulled the plug on the bot and deleted like all the tweets between "Hello World" and "We have to stop tweeting now," which was done less than 24 hours later. But there were a number of tweets where it would reply to people, and I think one of them, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it was like. What was it? It was just so bad. It was responding to people who were posting about like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and saying how they're the last chance for how things are gonna go, and there was a post where I guess that they even made it so it would reply to pictures. So someone sent it a picture of Hitler, and what it did was it circled Hitler's face, and in kind of in a, I don't know if this was a, like a stock thing that it wrote, but it wrote "swag" underneath. It's like, oh my God, how did this get released to the internet? And it's, you know, a shocking failure, or maybe not that shocking failure, of what happens when you try and program an artificial intelligence bot using the internet. I mean, God, that's horrible.
That's not where it should be learning from.
Right. Right, right. Exactly. I think, you know, it could learn like maybe patterns or styles or something, but it really has to be vetted before it starts talking to other people, I think. Especially because, you know, Twitter and social media in general, I mean, if you want any further example of how bad it could be, go to the like YouTube comment threads. It's just I can't even imagine if they use that to program the bot. it's really a problem, because I think as much as, you know, people like to say that, oh, this is how we talk now, it's really not. I mean, Twitter and other social media it is a medium for communication and being social. I mean, it's in the name, but it it is not a like an actual conversation style, and so it shows that it can be like aped and kind of parroted back, which
is... Well, yeah, it did also have a function that if you tweeted repeat after me, it would do it.
But wouldn't it do... I thought it was only doing it in a DM-style fashion. So, like, it would... I mean, the tweets that I was seeing were not replies to people. These seemed like just actual things going out into the world.
It was both.
Okay. but yeah, it's... I think they want it. I mean, it was ambitious for them to want it to be programmed by people, but I think there are enough folks on the internet that are, you know, easily pleased by things responding to them that messing with it became like the immediate thing to do, and it quickly took on the persona of a naughty racist little child. But again, it's really a factor of how it was responding to programming, but then also where it was getting its programming from, which is to say, you know, the potentially worst of the social media bunch, where anyone can say anything with pretty much zero consequences. So that's it's not exactly polite, polite society. It's not exactly something where people derive a lot of I think meaningful conversation. I think it's enough that you can get some information from it. You can get things that make you investigate other things, but if you're using it purely as a way to hear things or learn things, it's going to be a very incomplete and easily biased set of information. So, unfortunately for the Tay AI bot, I think their Twitter handle was Tay and You, as in T-A-Y. I had checked it a little while ago, and like I said, there were only like three tweets that were left up in the feed. So they might reactivate it. I think they need to. They probably should have done a soft launch, maybe tried it out without, you know, throwing their weight completely behind it before exposing it to the world. But whatever. I think it's inevitable to have the bots kind of talking to us a little bit. I mean, I know that there are certain... We've talked about Twitter bots on the show before. I think, what was it? Stealth Mountain might have been my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm not sure if that's still a thing or not. But yeah, that was the one that if you wrote sneak peek and you wrote peak, P-E-A-K, instead of P-E-E-K, it would tweet at you to let you know what you'd done. And things like that, I think, are funny and hilarious. I'm not so sure about a system that you would actually have conversations with, only because I don't feel the need to do that. I like conversing with people. I mean, we do that on a show every week. This is our thing. So so hopefully they'll work some kinks out and give it another try. But in the meantime, if you'd like to talk to people and you'd like to be on the show with us, let us know. We're always looking for guests on the Not a Thing podcast. Just let us know via Twitter or Facebook or the HAL
900. Send us a drone.
Yes. The HAL 900 will respond to emails on the website at notathingpodcast.com. If you do have a drone to send us, would you want them to send us drones? They're not going to get them back if they send us drones.
Drones.
But
shoot with my shotgun.
Right. Speaking of drones, there's a new development in drone land. There actually are two, now that I think about it. One, which we'll just very quickly jump into, was that Google, or Alphabet, I guess, is selling off the robotics department that included the stuff from Boston Dynamics, which is that company that made the autonomous running dogs.
The metal thing of nightmares?
Yes. So there's hope yet that they will not, marry robots that can, run faster than humans, and the AIs that they're making, and all the search information and email databases that they've ever made. So hopefully the singularity will not occur with robotic dogs involved. It may still occur, but hopefully not involving robotic dogs. But the other news in drones this week is one you found about these underwater drones, or I saw them described as UUVs, unmanned underwater vehicles, which I think is really silly, because unmanned aerial vehicles is sort of fine, but underwater, I feel like you should use U and W as two different things, because are you going to make a different one for when it's on the water? It's just ridiculous. So,
but it can also go in the air.
Right. So this is the thing. It's not quite amphibious. Amphibious means sea and land. So I don't know if there's sea and air. I don't know if that's a thing, but I guess it is, because that's what these drones do. So they can operate underwater, and they can operate in the air. It looks just like a quadcopter with kind of a big central body. But the crazy thing about these drones is that they're made to, to be underwater for up to 2 months at a time. So their batteries can last that long. And then also they're made specifically to be corrosion resistant.
That's where they get the name. The Kraken with a C, corrosion resistant aerial covert unmanned nautical system.
I think they might have been reaching for the acronym there on that.
It's like
one.
SHIELD.
Or Spectre.
Yeah, Spectre. Yeah, definitely Spectre.
But
speaking of SHIELD, today we lost the great Gary Shandling.
Yes.
Hail Hydra.
Yeah. That's right. Oh my god, Hail Hydra. But the Kraken is great because, it, after up to 2 months underwater, it can be reactivated to fly through the air, so you have to wake the Kraken, which I feel like you have to, say out loud, you have to proclaim it before you actually do that. It should be like built into the control, like it won't respond until you proclaim, "Wake the Kraken!" and then do it. But I think I find this amazingly terrifying.
This is that nice cross section of it scares me, but it's really cool.
Yeah, right. I mean, the engineering is very interesting. Like to have something that can be in salt water for up to 2 months and not have failures due to rust or water leaking into things, and then to be able to operate both in the water and then, in the air after that amount of time is pretty impressive. And it really has a lot of, you can just see all the applications of letting these go off the coast of whatever via, some crazy super submarine, and then having, fleets of swarms of drones in the air, the next day.
Well, they're saying they could mount them with mines. So it'd be like sea mines that you can take out of an area when you're done mining it. Oh, you put explosives on these things.
Oh my gosh. That sounds horrible.
Well, I mean, it's better than just leaving the sea mine there, I guess.
I guess. But you only have 2 months to deal with it. Like, if you don't end up blowing up your thing in 2 months, you gotta fly it out of there.
You take it back. Yeah, you fly it out. Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. It has a lot of interesting applications. I think shooting them out of the sky or out of the water now is going to be a thing.
You need more than one ping.
That would be really interesting. I wonder what the sonar cross section is for something like that, because it is pretty sizable as kind of a quadcopter goes. I mean, it's bigger than like a, you know, the DJI Phantom, which I use as my like standard size for quadcopters. but it would probably sound really weird, because it's certainly mechanical, but I wonder if it's small enough that you wouldn't notice it until it was too late. Gotta do the Crazy Ivans, like in
Hunt for Red October,
yes. Because the sonar arrays are better in the front than in the back. Oh, what a great movie. But the Krakens, I think it's probably got a little while before they're mass produced or anything. But I think the Navy's probably going to get them. Probably, we'll see. If you'd like to donate one to the Not a Thing podcast for evaluation's sake, we probably wouldn't shoot it with a shotgun right away.
No, not that one. Yeah. If the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab wants to send us one, we would happily use it for good.
Hashtag Krakens for good. Speaking of donations for good, there's some talk in Palo Alto for housing subsidies. Living in Palo Alto, California, kind of the very rich end of Silicon Valley, you could call it that, is kind of nuts. I mean, houses like don't exist under $1 million in certain parts of Palo Alto, and the city council, I believe, is looking into some plans of offering housing subsidies to people. But the housing subsidies are for people who make, what was it, $150,000 to $250,000
yes.
a year. So that's your upper and lower bound for your eligibility to live in Palo Alto. It's the people who are in that range already can't afford a house. But they're willing to give you subsidies if you are moving into that area. That's a little nuts. $250,000 is real high. I mean, $150,000 is real high for folks. I mean, in the Bay Area, I guess it's not, sort of. I don't know. That still seems
high.
That seems real amazing, but it's just showing more and more about how the middle class is getting completely squeezed out of California, or at least the Bay Area, and certainly in tech. I think I don't know if this is a response to having too many houses on the market, though, because it might be that people are finally figuring out that there's too much supply and not necessarily enough demand, or not enough demand at the prices that people are willing to pay. I know a bunch of people that just can't afford to live anywhere near where they work because it's just too crazy expensive because of a number of factors in the Bay Area. But but this is what I consider a very extreme reaction to it. I'm amazed. Housing subsidies for people that make less than $250,000.
What about everyone making under $150,000?
Right. right. Yeah, yeah, we don't...
They
we
have to live around there and do the jobs that those other people don't do.
Yes, yes. Because there's certainly those jobs. I mean,
I don't think the people of Palo Alto want those people living in Palo Alto.
Right, right. Well, that's the unfortunate thing.
Which is kind of bullshit.
Yes, yes. I think it's not a done deal yet. It was just an idea.
It's just everyone's living in East Palo Alto.
Yeah. Hey, the IKEA out there has made it so much nicer to go to East Palo Alto.
Why else would you go to East Palo Alto?
But yeah, just some more ridiculousness about living in Silicon Valley.
I'm glad I don't do anymore. Other than the friends I left behind. It would make recording very different if I still lived there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think it's still fun and exciting to do the recording this way. And it also means that we're generally well prepared for when we have guests on, because guests also tend to be remote. So it's like every show we're practicing for guests.
Still practicing 100 and how many episodes later?
180. It's 180 today.
180.
Yeah.
A complete 180. Halfway to 360.
Yep. In fact,
maybe we should end the show at 360.
Yeah, it's still fun and exciting to do, and I only just started putting it on my resume that I host the podcast. So we'll see if that helps me get a job or not.
But... maybe we can give this a sponsorship. Yeah, well, I recently had an interview and I brought up the podcast, but I didn't say how to get to it.
Oh. I think if you Google Not a Thing Podcast, we do come up first. We're not the only ones, yeah. which is not.
Is that placeholder still there?
So not the placeholder. There's another podcast called How Is That Not a Thing? And I don't know how many episodes they have. I just noticed that it came up when I
less than us, I'm sure. Let's do the bejesus out of them.
Yeah.
There's a sponsorship through lawsuit.
I'm sure that's a
bit troll.
That is a business model. In which case, our show would be listed as not a thing on our own show.
We will compromise, man.
So, speaking of interesting compromises, a firearm manufacturer, and I can't remember the name of it. It's not a major one. It's they've released the concept.
Ideal Conceal.
Oh, well, that's the name of the gun. I don't remember.
No, that's the company.
Oh, well, they haven't named it then. They haven't named the gun, I guess. Well, in any case, this company, Ideal Conceal, has come up with kind of 3D renderings, at least, of a potential firearm that they're making, and it's a firearm based on the 380 cartridge, which is like a tiny 9mm style,
like a Derringer
style bullet, and it's a Derringer style gun, right? It's got two striker fired barrels that can fire, so you have two shots. But the interesting thing is it does have kind of a normal pistol shape, but it also folds, so the handle folds up next to the barrel, so it's more easily concealable. And the shape that it makes when you fold it together is it looks like a big cell phone, like a you know, iPhone 6 Plus or a Galaxy S7 kind of phone. It even has a belt clip that is attached to it, like the ones that horrible people wear when they wear their phones outside their pants, and it's like on the belt, you know. It's really I mean they made it so, and I think they made it so like it has a laser sight on it, and when you unfold it, the thing that is where the camera or the headphone jack would be is where the laser sight comes out of. It's a little disturbing. I'm pretty sure this is not a thing that you should not make firearms look like other things that aren't firearms. I think that's
people
generally...
People get shot by the police enough as it is.
Yeah.
This is only going to make things worse.
Right, right. I don't want to have to prove that my cell phone is a cell phone and not a gun while a cop is pointing theirs at me. I feel like that's a really bad thing. Not that I would do this. I think mainly because of the carry methodology is you have to wear it to look like you have the cell phone on your belt, which is totally not a thing.
You get an OtterBox for it.
It does look like a cell phone with like a really big honking case on it. So I think there's a lot of reasons to not this is not a thing. I think it is going to be successful in making a lot of people talk about it, probably with very raised voices and not a lot of forethought, as is most discussions about gun laws in the United States. But hopefully it does cause some conversation to happen that might make make gun laws more reasonable, if that's a thing.
You know, I think we need to take a step back here and move away from these concealed guns. I think we need, as a society, we should really get together and change the laws to allow swords again. Open carry swords.
Everyone knows what they're dealing with as soon as you walk in the door.
Exactly. Like, if everyone just has swords, people will be less likely to cause trouble.
Hashtag open carry swords. I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
I'm not saying knives. I'm not saying daggers. I'm saying no. Swords.
Yeah, yeah. And like the two-handed variety, right? Not little fencing swords. We want like...
No, I want like a katana.
Freaking claymores is where I was going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that too. Now I just really want to watch that movie Ghost Dog. Forrest Whitaker as the samurai.
Right, right. Yes, that had an awesome soundtrack. I remember when that came out.
He put the eye in samurai.
Oh, God. Wow.
I'm just going to go ahead and turn my mic off and just sit out the rest of the podcast.
You can drop it, but make sure you turn it off before you drop it because no one wants to hear that kind of sound.
Yeah, no.
But, yes. Moving on to...
Derailing the podcast since its inception.
Moving on to a story that we've sort of talked about. We talked a bit about the Apple and FBI kind of warring over it in court about being able to unlock cell phones in general, but specifically the cell phone of one of the shooters in the who was involved in the massacre in San Bernardino. And what a couple security companies have come up with is that the FBI is applying this wrong because they have not exhausted all of their methods of getting the data off of the phones. So I read of a few different methods, but there's a bunch of security companies saying that they would do it. They would try to, break into the phone for the FBI such that Apple does not need to compromise its software or otherwise make it insecure for the general populace to use. And I've read two different methods for breaking into the phones, both of which are pretty labor intensive. This is not the kind of thing where you're gonna, you know, buy some off the shelf parts and do it. It looks like so. One of them is called NAND mirroring. NAND stands for something I used to know. I took electrical engineering in college, but I think it's actually specifically the not and logical gate, but that's what a lot of computer memory is based on. And so what they're thinking of doing is mirroring the bit of memory that is used to as the counter for the number of times the passcode has been entered incorrectly, so you can reset it whenever you want. So you can try it however many times it would before it triggers the thing to erase the phone, and then just reset that count back to zero, so you could try it again, or have a computer try it again. I don't know if they have people like actually trying combinations in manually, but it's one way to do it. And then the other way, which I found fascinating, is called focused ion beam. We'll link the story in the show notes, but it involves drilling into the where the memory of the phone is to expose the actual silicon, and then you're using a focused beam of electrons, so you can manipulate the individual bits in the silicon chip, which I find fascinating. I mean you need a like scanning electron microscope in order to aim it, because you're shooting at essentially, you know, the individual atoms of silicon to flip them to be one or zero to read them and then change them to unlock the phone. Both of these sound like things that are probably pretty invasive to the phone. But the good thing is you can get teardown manuals for almost all Apple products and other small devices on the internet. It's great. If you go to, I just actually got a kit from iFixit. I was thinking about replacing the battery in my iPhone. I ended up not doing it because the amount of pain that I think would be involved in doing it after watching the teardown video does not exceed the cost of me bringing it to the Apple store and having them do it. but I was really impressed by the depth that people went to do it. I think they must be taking direction from people that used to work at Apple and Samsung and the companies that they feature in their teardowns, and mining them for ideas about how to make these. So I'm a firm believer in do it yourself and you know, especially when it's computer things. Now that computers are real tiny and fit in your pocket, it's still possible to do them manually. I think breaking into these phones is still a lot of work and probably involves more parts than like kind of even really dedicated people would generally do. That being said, if the FBI really wants to do it, it looks like there are companies that are out there that'll help them break into the phones. It'll be interesting to see what they end up using, assuming they don't just use the court order to force Apple to undo it. But you know, that legal battle is a mess right now. I think it did just get a stay because the FBI did acknowledge that it could try one of the two methods that we talked about. So the judge is saying that Apple doesn't have to necessarily, do anything yet. But that it remains to be seen if it sets a precedent or not regarding what happens with requests to aid law enforcement, and when that butts up against, you know, software and encryption and personal data and stuff like that. It's a cool topic. We're actually following it. Isn't that great?
Yep.
It's a thing.
we can change our segment from fuck the police to fuck the FBI. if you're listening, NSA, don't tell the FBI I said that.
nor the police, for that matter.
Yeah, that'd be great. You can tell the CIA, I don't care.
Yeah, hopefully they aren't using the CIA to spy on internal folks. Not yet, anyway.
They're not supposed to. So they obviously don't.
Right. I'm sure they, you know, all the three-letter agencies play real nice with each other.
That's how they stop all the terrorism?
Ah. Oh, yeah. Something like that. In any case, let's let's move on to, unfortunately, something else that goes boom.
Well, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. But this is boom as in sonic boom. So okay. We talked a bit a while ago about how there was a group that wanted to restore a Concorde, which was the commercial supersonic airliner that used to fly between, I think it was New York and London, or maybe it was New York and Paris. But it had all sorts of restrictions and problems, and the company running it really didn't know what they were doing, and they ended up going away. So supersonic travel for commercial means is not really available, even to people that
really rich.
Yes, yes, you still have to fly like kind of normal jets. But a company called Boom Aeronautics is partnering with Virgin. And I think they're actually partnering with the folks in Virgin Galactic to to help put together a supersonic jet. So they're shooting for a something that'll fly at, I think it was Mach 2.2,
which is faster than the Concorde was.
Yeah, yeah. And their scenario was that if you wake up at, I think it's 6 in the morning, you could fly to
London, you know, from New York.
Right. Fly to London from New York. You'll get in the early afternoon because you still have the time difference to contend with. But you could be home by 8 that evening. So, I mean, it's almost, you know, it's almost a normal commute. It's a Bay Area commute. 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's a full day in tech in the Bay Area. Yeah. but they're smaller planes than commercial jets. I think even the Concorde, it's smaller than that. I think it ends up holding, I want to say it's under 100 people. It may even be under 50 people. But it flies at Mach 2.2. It also flies above 60,000 feet, which is way, way high. So I assume that's to cut down on air resistance for faster speeds. I mean, we can't all fly the SR-71. So,
if only.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can fly it anymore, really. But this sounds really interesting, especially, you know, being backed by Richard Branson and Virgin. You know, I mean, if Elon Musk is Tony Stark, Richard Branson is who do we go with?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. It's real fun. Richard Branson,
obviously, Richard Branson is Richard Branson.
He has a lot of fun being the CEO of a lot of things and having fun backing stuff like supersonic jets and spaceships. So that's great. Keep doing
San Francisco to Tokyo in under 5 hours.
That's nuts.
Los Angeles to Sydney in 6 hours. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it normally? Like
15 hours.
Yeah. It's a lot of time. It's obviously real fast. I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with how sonic booms work. Like, would you hear a sonic boom in the plane?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
That'd be pretty cool if you did, but yeah. I don't think you would.
Yeah, I just want to fly in something that goes supersonic. That just sounds fun.
Well, if they do this and you've got like $6,500, you could be eating sushi in Tokyo for lunch.
It's, you know, until we get, you know, the Hyperloop transport, you know, this is what we want. We want really high-speed travel. Really, we want teleporters.
Yeah, exactly. All this is just middling steps till we can get to teleportation.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll probably get there. I'm not super sure I want to be the first in the booth, but... But I'll gladly get on a supersonic jet, especially if they're willing to toss us a couple tickets to fly to Australia in 6 hours. We'd gladly say that was a thing.
I would gladly take advantage of that, not leave the airport and fly straight to New Zealand. Everything that wants to kill you lives in Australia. Everything that wants to drink with you lives in New Zealand.
Oh, and did you see New Zealand? They rejected a different flag.
Yeah, I kind of like the new flag design incorporating the silver fern leaf, but yeah. Nope, they're sticking with the old Dominion.
Yeah, the Union Jack in the corner.
Yeah.
So it's... There's still potential votes to come, but yeah, they voted, I think it was this week Union Jack in the upper left corner. And then is that the Southern Cross? Is that what the constellation is on the right? Yeah. Oh, New Zealand.
John Oliver call them Australia's Chia Pet or something? I love New Zealand.
Yeah. If there are any folks from New Zealand that would like to be on the show, please let us know. We'll gladly have you on. That's the nice thing about the internet is that it almost does not matter where you are. You do have to have internet. That's our only...
And be prepared for a time change.
yeah, right. But that's really our only constraint is you have to have enough internet to be on the show with us. But... it would be great. Let us know, Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. In any case, Brendan, that's probably it. I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.